Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be discussing in this episode are the top 1,000 trades, hardcovers, original graphic novels, collected editions, yada, 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 as sold through Diamond to retailers for all of 2014. So, Chris, we've been doing this, 8 years now?
We have, yep.
Most of those 8 years, we've had a fairly small set in the early years of trades that they would give every month. That got bigger and bigger and bigger. We're now getting to where we've gotten the top 1,000 bestsellers for the year. This is different than what we see every month in terms of we're getting the top 300 items. So some of these items, in theory, could fall below the radar, that kind of a deal. But it's gotten to where we've gotten so many things on the top trades list every month, that's really just not much of a factor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's different about this year from previous years is they actually put an index value on every item on the list. So I was able to do the math, knowing how the December items sold, that kind of a thing, cracked a list, and we actually have pretty good estimates this time around versus in past years where I would say, oh, these are ballparks, and I knew, you know, the bestseller had to sell more than the second bestseller all the way down the line. It would do the funny stair-stepping. None of that this time around.
Okay.
So we're not going to play around with, well, it had to sell more than this. Here's what unreported. Nah, it's just, here's what Diamond is saying was the bestsellers for the year. And this data is as accurate as, or these estimates are as accurate as the data we're getting out of Diamond, and I've got no reason to question that so far. At least with this data set. There have been one or two in the past I've looked at and said, no, this just didn't write. But that's happened, I think, like once, twice over the 8 or so years we've been doing these things.
Well, I'm glad Diamond decided to listen to one of our shows and take note.
Same here. I mean, they're doing a good job by and large, particularly given just the volume of stuff that moves through them.
Yeah, they got a lot to keep track of, that's
for
sure.
Oh, yeah. At some point I still want to get, and I just haven't gotten back to him, the guy who does previews, get him on, talk about that process, because geez, every couple of weeks they get another 5,000 items in their catalog.
Oh yeah.
That's crazy. So, what we'll do this time around is we will start by looking at kind of that breakdown of the top 1,000 items, 1,000 best-selling trades. Now, I've got the top 1,000, I've also got about 37 items that kind of fell below that radar. Off the top small and top indie graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
And small and indie, in my mind, kind of nebulous, ill-defined terms, but it gave us another 37 items. So we've got a few things. But those are also non-contiguous rankings.
Mm-hmm.
So for the moment, let's ignore that with the breakdown. The clear winner, I think, this time around in terms of 2014 and the most units sold, DC Comics, with 393 items on the list. So that's, I was going to say what the percentage was, clearly 39.3%, and I'm noticing my percentage column is just totally horked up. So, well, okay. I can either take a look at that real quick, and I don't need to. I found where the math is wrong. One of the things I hate about doing the year-end numbers, there we go, is the process differs a little every year based on what they actually release, and I don't know what they're releasing until they got it.
Right.
This time, first time since I think 2010, which I think was the only other time, they had the index value, so different process time. Anyways, so 39.3, you know, with 1,000 items on the list, I'm not even going to bother with the percentages.
No,
if you can't do that math and you're listening to this episode, I'm impressed. Anyways, 393 items on the list with total reported sales of about $1.5 million, you know, and then when you translate that to dollars, that gets it to about $30.4 million. So DC, they did well. Next best with 251 items in the top 1,000 for 2014 is Marvel Comics, which on the one hand, a little bit of a surprise because they're not known for having an incredibly strong backlist.
Right.
But they get enough stuff on there, you know, every time. But they sold under 1 million units from the combined total of the 251 items. It was 933,928 estimated units for a total dollar value at full retail price over a little over $22 million.
Mm-hmm.
So not shabby at all, but it does show that DC, and a lot of that is Vertigo, but DC has a very strong backlist program. Now, the other one that's very interesting, and in terms of both the number of items it's got and just the success of those items, is Image Comics, which was in the third place in terms of that ranking by total units sold. They did it with 115 items, so significantly less than Marvel or DC, less than half the number of items on the list than Marvel, and well under a third from DC. Yet, with the 115 items, they sold, 941,972 units, which is, what, eighth? So they sold 941,972 units, which is about 8,000 or so units more than Marvel sold. So with half the number of items on the board selling, you know, a little bit over Marvel, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They
really came on strong this year, as opposed to the years past. We knew they were moving up in, you know, rankings and percentages and the amount of items being published, but boy, you know, 2014, they really, you know, hit the ground running and haven't looked back, really. And it looks from, you know, we discussed it in the December numbers for what's coming up for 2015 with their new releases and everything, that they're not slowing down whatsoever. They're going to push that pedal right to the floor and really make a charge. And, you know, maybe for a number two spot, you know, we know how DC Marvel fluctuate, but really hold on to at least a solid number three for month in and month out. There's no doubt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think part of the way they beat out the units, the total units sold in the top 1,000 bestsellers for 2014, how they beat Marvel out, lower average cover price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have. Yeah.
I mean, they do a lot of them at the $9.99 or $14.99 first volume stuff, and that pays off. It gets people in the door on a title that makes it more likely for them to get later volumes.
Mm-hmm.
But what that also means is while they did about 8,000 more units than Marvel in the top 1,000 bestsellers for 2014, they did it with only about $14.6 million worth of material versus the $22 million that Marvel had.
This doesn't really go much to the numbers as it is in marketing and advertising. And you know, that's my background in my career is digital marketing. For some reason, I found myself on Image's website last week. And, you know, I hadn't been on Image's website in, probably a good year. And they had done a site redesign in the past year. And boy, I'll tell you what, John, they have a very clean website. It's, you know, it's very up to date. It's very user friendly, user experience friendly. And I was really, really impressed from a, you know, digital marketing standpoint. And if nobody has been on Image's website in a while, I really implore you to go do that and go check it out. And then go check it out compared to what DC and Marvel have to offer. And it's night and day. And I think people will be really, really impressed with what they're doing on all aspects of their marketing initiative.
It's been a while since I've been on the Image site, so I need to check that out myself.
Mm-hmm. I just think they make it, you know, nice, really, for the user, and that's what it's all about.
Well, yeah.
And, you know,
I mean, that's at the end of the day, if people can't find what they're looking for there, if it's not a fun experience, good experience, they're not going to come back.
Right.
And that's one of the most effective ways you can advertise these days.
Yes.
Somebody's not even, they're not even meeting you halfway. They're meeting you, you know, 90% of the way. It's like, I'm interested enough. I'm going to your site. Tell me what I want to know.
Mm-hmm. And it's enough to keep you on their site and, you know, shop around and browse and see what, you know, other special features they have and everything. So it's a really nice experience as opposed to other websites out there.
Well, I think Image for the longest time had been kind of operating almost still in a startup mentality even after 20 years.
Right.
The Image Central line was just kind of there, but it's not like it had really grown or fully blossomed and gotten out of kind of that startup stage. And I think over the last year or two, they've gotten incredibly serious about getting more creator-owned properties from big-name creators over at Image. So they've almost done a recruitment campaign, and now it sounds like from what you're saying on the website, they've beefed that up. It's mm-hmm. like they're, I don't say they're just now getting serious about publishing, because I don't think they've never been not serious about it.
Right.
But I think they're really starting to get some of their act together in a couple of key places, mm-hmm. which is why we're seeing them doing so well in the top sellers for 2014.
Well, and it also shows from a business standpoint, you know, you kind of mentioned as a startup, they're, you know, paying their bills and they're now putting money and equity back into their company. And it shows whenever I come across a website that's nice and clean and redone and up to date, I can tell that they finally put money in, because any smart businessman knows that when times are tight, the thing that you get cut is the marketing budget. But when you have money, the thing that gets beefed up is the marketing budget. So, you know, it looks like things are good at Image these days, which is really good to see. And I hope it is like that across all companies. I would love to see IDW do well. I know Valiant has been doing very well. We talked up a lot about them the past 2 years. I think it's just that, you know, every year we try to gauge, was it a good year for comics? Was it a bad year for comics? You know, I think it was a good year for comics. And, you know, we talked about that the last episode, too. And, you know, as a year-end, you know, reflection, I think it was good, not only in movies and television, but also in comics, and especially, you know, trade paperbacks as well.
Well, we've gotten to the point where, and we've talked about this a lot before, mm-hmm. comic properties are so widely accepted now.
Exactly.
That there is a cultural acceptance hurdle that's so low now you trip over it for a comic publisher.
Yeah.
You don't need to sell somebody on the concept of the Avengers are cool. They've seen the movie.
Yeah.
And
it's got star power. Right. And, yeah.
Well, it's got star power even, you know, third rung comic book properties like Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's face it, that's not an A-list, B-list, or frankly, sometimes even a C-list property.
Yeah.
Granted, they've put some A-list creators on it from time to time.
Yeah.
But the property itself, not that big of a deal. It had a hit movie, one of the best ones, best money makers, I believe, of the year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, comics have a perceived almost Midas touch to a degree at the moment, in some circles. Mm-hmm. And if you can get the website up to date and effective, man, somebody sees the movie, they search on Guardians of the Galaxy, they search on Walking Dead, they search on your property, you get them to your website and give them the information they need, that's a great way to go get sales.
Yeah, and yeah, it's not about, as a guy who's in search, I don't, you know, if I'm Robert Kirkman, it's great that somebody will go to, you know, Wikipedia or the Walking Dead wiki or whoever creator, you know, did that kind of thing. But you want them ultimately be coming to the Image Comics website so they can learn more about the Walking Dead from the Image Comics publisher, right?
But
I mean, that's the real goal, you know.
If you're Robert Kirkman and you've got both Skybound and the Image Central line under you.
Yeah.
And you've got somebody who's working on the website. Get an intern or that person working on the website just to go to the various properties Wikipedia page and make sure that the official site, you know, is on.
Oh, you want the backlink. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, it's like, here's where to go learn more. Here's the official site of The Walking Dead, of mm-hmm. Saga, whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, frankly, I think the smaller guys can be a lot more agile and nimble at, mm-hmm. be it, you know, Image, Valiant, Dark Horse, IDW, whereas Marvel and DC are part of these big corporate conglomerates and monstrosities. Mm-hmm. And no doubt they have entire, you know, digital communications specialist departments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, how much they've got to go through that, how much control they have over that, I don't know. But I know it's a much bigger deal and therefore a little bit more bureaucratic. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just got a couple of people or, you know, doing your website or whatever, you can do a lot pretty quickly.
One of my favorite websites out there, and I've talked about it a lot on my podcast, is the IDW Limited website. I think it's IDWLimited.com, if I'm not mistaken. And it is your basic, you know, limited edition IDW, oversized, the red label, the black label, everything. You know, it's that type of property that IDW has with their, you know, they got the artist editions up there too and whatnot. But, you know, I'm a fan of their Facebook page, and boy, they get no traffic on their Facebook page. And I know it's for a very niche audience. And these are very expensive and limited books, but I really wish they would have more PR, more presence, and you know, just kind of exploit it more, because I think more people would really like it. But I don't see it on any of their, you know, solicitations. When I see it come down from Charlie's List on Comic List or anything like that, or, you know, it's almost like this web property that you kind of come across by accident. But when you find it, it's like really cool. And I really wish they would exploit it more.
It's almost like they're going for an elitist secret kind of a deal.
It is. Exactly. You know, I'm happy I know the secret. I know the secret the password to get on the site, right?
Yeah. On the one hand, that's cool when you know about it. But it's also, you're right, something they're keeping such a low profile on.
Yeah.
I know you've told me about it before, and I've forgotten all about it. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They, they've got a website. They got the Facebook page. They have a Twitter feed. They have an email newsletter. It's all tied into each other. And it seems like the same four guys, you know, comment on it on Twitter and on Facebook. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. Nobody really knows about it. But I know these books sell. You know, they've got a limited print run. But, you know, what I should ask you one time if you could find those numbers for like what a IDW Red Label Ninja Turtles book sells. You know, is it like 100 copies maybe? Because I think they only print like 100 copies, you know, so it's very, very limited, as the name implies.
It's then a question of, does it go through Diamond? And it may not. In that case, I wouldn't have the numbers.
It might go through, you know what, but they have it on the solicitations, though, every once in a while. You know, we'll have to talk about that in a future episode. You know, or bring that up somehow in the forum. Because that would be something to really, you know, talk about and do a, you know, deep discussion about really hard to find limited books, like, you know, because I'm, you know, like the differences between a direct market print or the regular print from a Marvel omnibus, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they have the different covers for that. Like the Star Wars one just came out, where they got the, you know, the different the Chaikin and the other cover they have too.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's many routes you can go. So, you know, how limited are these limited runs, really?
Well, and, you know, how much does it pay off for them to do it and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's true.
Because at that point, if it's just the variant cover on a collection, I mean, the incremental cost, on the one hand, is just the piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
But on a collected edition, the creative costs are really the cost of whoever, the production guy who assembled the issue, or the mm-hmm. volume, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that the cost of a good Alex Ross cover or Chaikin cover or whatever, percentage-wise, could be a big deal, actually.
Mm-hmm. True. Mm-hmm.
But it's there's so many things that factor into the sales and whatnot that it's hard to know what's the most profitable, what isn't. And again, why do they make some of the decisions? Why aren't they more vocal about the IDW limited stuff and whatnot?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So, rounding out the other premier publishers, Dark Horse had 88 items on the list. They did about 279,000 units, all said and done, across those 88 items for about 5.2 million within the top 1,000 items. And then IDW only had 36 items on the list, did almost 126,000 units, and a little over, 2,933,667.82 at full retail price.
Yep.
Now, of course, they're not seeing the full retail price. Diamond does the discount. You know, we've talked about that kind of ad nauseum. But this is as good a way as any to represent the dollar value on that.
Yeah.
Since we don't know the actual discounts, which stores got, and all of that. Everybody else did 25 items or less, and the 25 items was Random House, which frankly may be an artifact of how Diamond reports stuff, because sometimes stuff from Legendary and other publishers just gets lumped into Random House.
Mm-hmm.
But Boom did 19 items on the list, Viz did 17, Oni about 10, Avatar 8, and then really from there it's just loose change. A couple items, you know, an item here or item there on the top list.
Yeah, when I see, like, Valiant, you know, one item on this top 1,000 list, it really makes me feel bad for them that it didn't sell more. That's not to say they didn't sell a lot of units, because this is just the top 1,000. We saw Valiant, just about every trade paperback or hardcover they published this year was on the monthly list. But it's too bad as far as units go, they didn't get more units into the top 1,000.
Well, more items. And because really you only needed 1,750 units to make the list this year.
Yeah.
It's just so many things are coming out, even if it's from a high name, you know, high profile creator or whatnot. That's not enough to guarantee being on the list.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison, Zenith Phase 1 collection, the hardcover there, that was on the list at rank 987.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison's a pretty big name, you know, 1,781 units. And this is, I believe, the first time this material has been collected in decades.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
So, you know, it's not like there's other volumes people could have gotten or had it sitting on the shelf or whatever. So it's fascinating to me that big name creators on some of their early pivotal work or whatever, people just aren't aware of, aren't ordering. You know, it's again, it comes down to how effective was the marketing, I think.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
If we jump towards the top of the list, one of the things we notice about the top 10 is DC had Batman, the first volume of the trade paperback, at rank 9. Everything else was Image.
Yep.
Image had multiple volumes of Saga and Walking Dead on there. They also had the first volume of Sex Criminals. All of this being trade paperbacks in the top 10.
Yeah, they just crushed it. They really did.
Well, you look at the lower price point they tend to have, particularly on first volumes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got effectively what are perennials with Walking Dead. Saga's quickly become that. So, of course, it's going to be at the top of the list. You know, DC, I think, would have had a much better chance at this if they had kept the Vertigo imprint around and still had big name properties there.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, they still got Vertigo. They still have Fables, which is a big name property. But it's not like when they had Swamp Thing in its heyday or Animal Man in its heyday or Preacher or Sandman or, you know.
Hellblazer.
Yeah. Many of those things that were just an incredibly loyal audience that was very heavy on the trade paperback side of things. And Saga and Walking Dead are also doing really well on the monthly side.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this goes back towards your earlier point of Image is just doing great these days. If they can keep that up, you know, it may be another few years, but that's going to get to where that's just a serious game changer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And even looking down the list, you know, they got East of West coming in at rank 16, Rat Queens coming in at rank 15. You know, it just, you know, keeps going on and on. Black Science is on the list, John, at 19. It's just, it's all over here, mm-hmm. the top, you know. So, but you know, that also goes to, you know, the quality of what they're putting it out. It's not just they're putting out numbers, you know, they're putting out real quality, good comics. And, you know, compare that to the stuff at the bottom of the list, really. I mean, you know, does that mean like a DC and a Marvel are just publishing comics just to publish them? Or, you know, should they be putting really their effort into be making real quality comics with the best talent that they have? You know, it's the conundrum, you know, in a way. You know, are they going to be a machine or are they going to be, you know, laser focused?
I think Marvel and DC are trying to put out the best comics they can.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is they're doing it through work-for-hire arrangements.
Yeah.
Whereas everything at Image, particularly in the Image Central line, is something that the creators felt so passionately about that they put it together and they are paying Image to traffic the book and get it out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those creators have such a bigger stake in the game that it's not even funny.
But the customer can see through that, though. You and I can see through and see what is, you know, churn and burn, or we can look at a book like East of West or Saga and really appreciate what is being, you know, crafted here, you know?
I guess my point...
I mean, maybe it's because you and I know our comics, and we're not suckers, you know?
Well, but I guess my point is more that every once in a while, you'll essentially hear a creator say, I just took it was a paycheck for a DC or Marvel house property. You never hear that about a creator-owned thing.
Right.
So there's a fundamentally different level of investment on the creator's part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because...
Reputation, you mean?
Not just reputation, but they have control. Therefore, there's no... They can't blame a bad issue on, well, the editor made me do it.
Yeah.
The editor can't make them do it at the Image Central line. If there's a bad issue of Walking Dead, it's on Kirkman.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a bad issue of name any Marvel or DC house property, it's easy for the creator either then or years later to come out and say, well, you know, this was just forced down my throat. I thought it was a horrible decision, but it wasn't enough to walk away over. You know, I had to pay the mortgage, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not faulting creators for making that decision. Paychecks are nice. You know, my paycheck is how come I can be doing this podcast, buying all the comics, etc.
Yeah.
But it's a fundamentally different arrangement at Image, which is why you've got more passionate creators that promote their own work a lot better with the Image stuff, and a higher kind of general perception of its higher quality because the creator is putting more of themselves into the work. You know, I think the only thing I can think of that took that basic idea and just amped it up a couple of orders of magnitude is The Private Eye, which was a web-based comic that, hey, pay what you want. You want to get it for free? Get it for free. You think it's worth money? Pay money. Set the price.
Well, they're doing that in music now, too.
Yeah. But with Private Eye, I think that was kind of the first big-name creator really went out on a limb there and did that. That was Brian K. Vaughan, right?
Mm-hmm. Brian K. Vaughan.
And Marcos Martin on the art,
mm-hmm.
who's just been doing a bang-up, amazing job on the art, really kind of getting the digital format down. But there's no editor they can say, oh, well, it was a bad issue, or, oh, we had to do this. Everything is on them, and including the price that they get, the amount they get paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least with an Image book, well, you set the charge of $3.99, $3.50, what have you. So I think the way the business deal gets structured filters out certain things. You don't have people just going through the motions over at Image. Whereas I could probably point to a couple of books at various publishers where I really don't think the creator had their heart fully engaged when they were doing stuff.
Yeah.
And again, that makes sense given that arrangement, and I don't fault them for that. But I look at just the disparity between the stuff at the top of the list, just filtering it even just within Image.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Saga number 3 topped the list with 62,182 units sold over the course of 2014. The first volume of Saga was the second ranked item, 53,891 units. So easy entry point on a volume 1 there. Walking Dead, the first trade paperback there, all of this, again, trade paperback, unless I indicate otherwise. First Walking Dead trade paperback, 36,802 units over the course of 2014. So far, so good. Again, these are $14.99 books. What I find interesting is another one that I think has gotten a fairly good degree of buzz is Lazarus by Greg Rucka.
Oh. Yes, absolutely.
$9.99 first trade. You can't beat that in terms of a value and just a price point. It was down at rank 123 for the first trade paperback, 6,791 units, which is still really good.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been enough to top the trades list in most months, unless a Saga or a Walking Dead or some other thing just came out with gangbusters on, you know? Because those things just bulldoze through everything that's in their path almost. But there's about 10-to-1 difference between where that Lazarus first trade did and where that Walking Dead first trade did. And again, the Saga one. Actually, it's only about a 6-to-1 between it and Lazarus and Walking Dead. And I think all three are things that people would point to as saying these are high-quality books. Yet again, big difference in how they're selling. So, you know, where does the consensus on quality versus the numerical information we have on sales, you know, where do they start to diverge and why is to me always been a big question. And there is no easy answer to that.
Right.
Further down the list for Image, we've got everything from the first volume of Alex and Ada, which did 4,482 units at rank 242, down towards first volume of Cowl at rank 424, 3,195 units. Lowest item in the top 1,000 for Image was Thief of Thieves, volume 4 trade paperback, 1,791 units at rank 979. And again, they've got so many different titles on the list that it's not like in some years where it felt, yep, it's Walking Dead and one or two other things.
Right.
They've really kind of diversified their offerings. And the fact that the list goes 1,000 items deep, and frankly, only the first handful of items every month tend to be selling, you know, in strong units across, you know, the average store. It quickly gets on the monthly list where most stores are getting a copy.
Well, right. And, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit. It's not like, you know, one, you know, of course we're going to have a lot of Walking Dead, right? But it's not like we're going to have like one volume of Saga or one volume of this. I mean, you know, every Saga trade is on here. Every Chew trade is on here. You know, it's like everything is showing up, multiple volumes. So, you know, that's another good sign.
Well, and I think that's part and parcel of being published through Image.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're published through Marvel and DC and you're one of their superhero books, you're in the shared universe.
Yeah.
That means over the course of the year, you've got to pause to do a zero issue or a villain month or a Futures End or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or a crossover, or you're playing into a bigger thing.
Mm-hmm.
These Image titles, by and large, stand on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, yeah, sure, maybe there's a crossover here and there, but that's a rare exception. Saga is Saga is Saga. It sells based on the quality of Saga, not anything else over at Image. Same with Walking Dead, same with Lazarus, Chew, you know, everything. So each of these needs to be a stronger self-contained story and a story that has pretty much a clear through line.
Mm-hmm.
Not here's a 6-issue Batman arc followed by another random 6-issue Batman arc.
By 0-year Batman, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, presumably the arcs in Batman happen in chronological order because, well, that's when they were kind of done being written, not so much because it made sense for them to happen or there was a grand plan or a vision.
Yeah.
Whereas Walking Dead, Kirkman, I'm not going to say he had everything planned out. It really doesn't matter if he had any of it planned out. It happened in a chronological fashion. He's not suddenly going back and saying, well, you know, when Rick was just 8 years old, this is his backstory, his origin. And let's go tell that for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And hopefully he never does, because that, I think, would be fundamentally wrong for that property. And it's not like he probably listens to this episode or these episodes anyways.
Right.
But, you know, I do think Kirkman, though, needs to be commended for taking the Image central line from what it had been for ages to what it is now, which is just head and shoulders above the output level, the timeliness, the quality, you know. By almost any metric I can imagine, the current Image central line is just so far superior to the output of you know, any previous leader's tenure of it, is to be just phenomenal.
Right. They've done just a wonderful job. So I have to get more into Image these days, but so far I haven't.
Why don't we switch focuses away from Image, and how about we go, you want to do DC or you want to do Marvel?
Oh, let's do a little DC.
All righty. If you filter the list that way and look at the top 7 items, you'll see a common theme of Batman.
Yes.
Batman Volume 1 was their top seller. It was at rank 9, 24,788 units, followed by Batman the Killing Joke hardcover, 22,829 units, followed by Batman Death of the Family book and Joker mask set. Okay, that had the masks, was a little bit more than just a collection. 20,713 units. Then we've got the second trade paperback of Batman at 18,447 units. Then the third trade for Batman, 17,289 units. Then Batman Hush Complete, that trade paperback did 16,446. Followed finally by Batman Dark Knight Returns trade paperback, 15,974 units. And again, these are the total reported units on the top 1,000 list for the year. Which they had the index so I could do the math, et cetera, et cetera. So, obviously, Batman, key property over at DC. I don't think anyone would question that. I mean, you look at the comics list that has consistently sold 115,000 or more for a 3-year period. Unheard of. It just isn't done.
Mm-hmm.
All of those items did better this year than Watchmen, which did 14,362 units. Of course, if you look at the fullness of time for Watchmen, it's just, you know, insane. And of course, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I was just kind of crunching the numbers for what came out in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get, and this goes back to where I think Vertigo isn't what it once was. The first Vertigo item on the list was at rank 27, first volume of Fables, 14,081 units. Not bad, but there was a time where the Vertigo titles were frankly more relevant and just selling stronger over the course of the year.
Yeah, you're right.
There was a point where DMZ would have blown this out of the water, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Sandman Volume 1 trade paperback, 12,968 units. Then we're back to some Batman stuff, Long Halloween, Year One, Joker, Death of the Family. Then finally we get to our first other superhero title from DC at rank 37, and that's Justice League Volume 1 with 12,033 units. Now, this is the first volume that came out, 2012?
Yep, probably, yep.
So it essentially could have, if it was evenly sold throughout the year, done about 1,000 units a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd have to go dig up, you know, the monthly sales and go look at that to see if that's actually what it did. But it really puts an interesting perspective on this, where slow and steady can win the race.
Mm-hmm.
Just if you've got something that's got the demand. And again, Image had that. That's why Saga, Walking Dead, and all those other things were higher than most of these, or almost all of these, actually.
Right.
You got to have something that's got the pull with the reader, the stickiness, and the let's come back.
It's that evergreen property we always talk about, you know. And
yeah.
It, you know, like I said, it comes down to good storytelling. I mean, there's no doubt that what Snyder has done on Batman, you know, we've seen Batman do good, we've seen Batman do bad, you know, same with Superman, you know, same with Justice League. You know, Batman is doing very, very well these days. It's a great story. You know, Year One this past year was really fun to, or Zero Year was pretty fun to read too. It kind of dragged on a little bit. It's kind of what I thought. But, you know, overall, I thought it was pretty good. Good year for Batman.
And again, that's what's topping the list on the trade side for DC. I mean, that's proof in the pudding in so much as the general consensus very much agrees. What Scott Snyder's been doing on Batman is working.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question I would ask is, you know, good storytelling. That's what it's all about. We always say that.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is almost, I don't want to say precluded or impossible to do at Marvel and DC, but it just incredibly challenging because you don't own the property. You're limited in what you can do, when you can do it. Can you even get a crack at it? Does it fit the direction they want to go for the big picture of the universe or the character or what have you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they put unintentional hurdles in front of their creators that make it really hard for them just to knock it out of the park. Having said that, I do think a lot of those hurdles and rails around what the creators can do must be there and should be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen too many properties where it's just, I suddenly, new creator team takes over, I'm reading an issue, and it's like, this guy has no idea who these characters are. And for the best of intentions, I mean, that happened recently with the great new take on Batgirl and stuff. They'd lost sight of an aspect of what had gone previously in the title.
Right.
And did a misstep.
Right. And we see that at Marvel, too. We see it on Fantastic Four the past couple of years. We've seen good FF and really bad FF. And then we see gems come out of nowhere, like Hawkeye did very well, you know, the previous year and this year, too. And, you know, some of that stuff, John, you know, the market dictates it. You know, just by sitting here and, you know, trying to think of some good properties that came out of nowhere. You remember Immortal Iron Fist?
I mean,
that came out of nowhere and people loved it. And that's, you know, and that's one of the things where word gets around. Hey, you should be reading this title. You should be reading this title. And the next thing you know, it's fantastic. And, you know, Hawkeye was that little gem the past couple years now, and it's still doing well.
I would say in 2013. I would not say that for 2014.
Well, yeah, that could be. Yeah,
but that's the challenge.
But you know, I'm.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going there, and I agree with your basic point of if you've got something that's good and people can recommend it, and when they see the next issue on the rack as a person getting the recommendation, they pick it up and agree it is still good the next issue.
Yeah,
that's the goal, and that's tough to do.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how long do creators in some cases stay on the book? They change. The book changes hands. Or just the creator had an off day. Or it's time for a crossover. It's time for a guest star. It's time for, you know, sales stunt du jour. And that could just so break the momentum of a title.
Yeah.
Over the course of 2014, I thought there were a number of books, primarily at DC, that coming back after the Forever Evil break, which was a one-issue break, it felt like it was a totally different book. And yeah. In some cases, it truly was a totally different book. Batgirl is a good example. Batwoman's another example. Nothing right or wrong about making these kinds of changes. That's not a bad time to do it either. But if somebody said, oh, I'm loving this, I think you'll like it, and the next issue somebody picks up is after that kind of a left turn creatively, it's the wrong recommendation for the wrong person, maybe.
Well, a really good example of that would be, I just finished reading Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
I got caught up. I was in a Bucky mode, and I got caught up with the Ed Brubaker run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that collected, you know, his right after Fear Itself or during Fear Itself. And, that series went 19 issues, and Brubaker was on it for the first 14. And then it got switched over to, Jason Latour picked it up. And, you know, it continued the story, but it was a completely different book. And what happened? It lasted for, five issues, and it was done. And then
when they rebooted, they came back with Alan Davis art? Or am I off by a volume or two?
No, I think you were off, because it was Ed Brubaker and Michael Lark.
Mm.
That was the run. And then Latour took it over with the final few issues, and it read like a completely different series. The art was different. The direction was different. You know, Brubaker set it up so, they could continue the story, but boy, it didn't do much. I don't want to say it went off the rails. It was just, but it was very different, and they should have just ended it with Brubaker, but they didn't,
That's the kind of case, though, when you've got somebody's plot and it's like, this is the big plan. If somebody else executes on that, it's like, well, they're going through the motions that somebody else set up.
And it's a hard act to follow when it's Ed Brubaker and Michael Lark. I don't care who you're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. But even if it's a lower profile creator, if they've got a rock solid game plan and it's going to knock out of the park if they execute on it, for whatever reason, they can't. Somebody else comes in. They're like, well, this was the plan. I don't really get it. That's not how I would have done it, but that's the plan. Let's go with it.
Mm-hmm.
That hesitation, that lack of conviction, I think bleeds into the material.
Yeah.
As it kind of should. How many times have we seen the other instance where instead of letting somebody else play out the story, we get what we got on the Justice League run when they'd essentially replaced everybody with the Teen Titans. And it was the guy who did Starman. I'm blanking on his name.
James Robinson.
James Robinson, thank you. It got to where his last issue or so was basically a clip show slideshow of, this is my plan for the next year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of a rapid fire, here's what would have happened, or here's what I'm going to say did happen, because I didn't have time to tell it, but I'm telling it to, it's like, that's kind of not satisfying for a reader either.
Right.
But I think those are the reasons why a lot of company-owned properties these days are selling okay, but not great. It's just, mm-hmm. it's hard to get that kind of a buy-in and such.
It is. You're absolutely right.
If we look further down the list at DC, we've got some older properties showing up. A collection of, JLA Trade Paperback number 5 is their lowest one at rank 997. Which that was probably the Mark Waid run around that point. I'm not sure which issues that collects. It wouldn't surprise me if it was the Tower of Babel or one of those things.
Oh, that could be, yeah.
We've also got some of the Unwritten stuff, Dial H, Green Arrow, just, again, a plethora of different properties, the majority of them being their superhero stuff, which I don't think is a big surprise there. Flipping over to Marvel...
Yeah, what do they got going on?
Top item, Guardians of the Galaxy trade paperback number 1.
There you go.
23,737. How much of that was due to the movie? Don't know. It did start with Bendis, so that could be some of it too.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got Civil War, 15,260 units. Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, 13,745. First volume of Hawkeye. Presumably that most recent series, 12,554 units. And that was one, man, that title started out great, had an Eisner at least nominated, I'm pretty sure winning episode, mm-hmm. or issue, then delays, price hikes, issues out of order. That thing totally went off the rails in 2014.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But they've ended that series. They're relaunching it as the all new Hawkeye, a new creative team and such. Maybe they can recapture it. Don't know. Deadpool Volume 1, 12,111 units. Deadpool is just really doing well these days, so of course they're going to kill the character off.
Yeah.
We'll see if that takes.
Until the movie comes about.
Yeah. Well, speaking of movies, the next one down is X-Men Days of Future Past trade paperback, 11,576. I would be willing to bet this also did very well in the mass market.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It is obviously the go-to comic if you like the most recent movie.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got a rank or two below that at number 44 for Marvel, or a rank or two below that for Marvel, but at rank 44 overall, I should say. Thanos Infinity Revelation original graphic novel. That was a hardcover, 11,010 units.
That was by Sterling, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is one of those that they just kind of snuck out there.
Mm-hmm.
I had originally missed that solicit, because I'll be honest, I don't go apparently as attentively through the trade section of Marvel as I need to these days.
Yeah.
But most of it I'm not interested in, because I've got the individual issues. If it's an original thing or whatever, they need to really spotlight that a bit better, I believe.
Did you pick this up eventually?
Yes, eventually.
Was it good? Did you read it?
I liked it.
Yeah? Okay.
But I like the Starlin, Thanos, you know, Infinity stuff.
Yeah. No, he definitely knows the character. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But if you're not versed in the 80s, 90s stuff he was doing,
yeah.
Not to say you had to read it in the day. You could read it now and get versed in it that way. But if you're not really up on all of that, this probably wouldn't have the resonance with you.
Where did this story fit in with the continuity of Infinity Gauntlet, or did it at all? Or is this like a new story?
It was a new story.
Okay.
But it was kind of a little bit of a... If there was another one, and I want to make sure I don't get the two confused, and I may be. But it was one of those things where it was kind of telling his history and tweaking a few things here and there.
Oh, I remember that one. That, yeah. The Thanos. Yeah, they did like a... It was a four-issue...
That was a god up there listening. I may be getting the two confused.
That's down here, too. That is at rank 559. Yeah, that was a hardcover. Yeah, they're the hardcovers on here, anyway.
So...
And Thanos Imperative is on here, too. Thanos Rising, and... Yeah.
You know, what with him being in the movies and all, he's getting popular. Not that he was never before.
Right?
I mean, geez. But the god up there listening, that was a digital first that then got collected.
Yeah.
That was
a good story. I like that.
It was. They're telling great stuff with him, but they need to make sure those of us who are predominantly on the monthly side of things, which is the overwhelming majority of print readers, I believe, if you're going to collect something straight to, from digital to hardcover, point that out, make it more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Marvel had a few other original graphic novels. Down at rank 77, they had the X-Men No More Humans hardcover, 8,299 units. They had the Amazing Spider-Man Family Business hardcover, 7,673 units. And I'm thinking they might have had one other hidden somewhere on the list here.
Oh, No More Humans. X-Men No More Humans?
Yeah.
Did you mention that? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. That was the one I mentioned right before the Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's the only one on the list. Yep.
The problem with doing these episodes is trying to keep up with what the other guys say and while going through the list to go find the next thing to say.
I'm sorry.
Hey, I do it too. Well, particularly on a list this long, most months we've only got 300 items. It's not that big of a deal.
Exactly.
Because, you know, you can kind of weed out the, well, nobody's ever heard of a few of these publishers, so we don't need to spend much time on them. But we've got 251 items just for Marvel right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's part of what makes crunching the numbers for these year-end episodes just such a fun experience. And rather time consuming. But, I mean, they've got everything on this list on up and down from, you know, X-Factor, What If, Cable and X-Force, you know, a few things that are some older material.
Yeah, a lot of the brand names. Hulk, Avengers, Miracle Man is on here. The Miracle Man hardcovers reprints are on here, too.
Have you been following the Miracle Man stuff? You've been reading it?
I have not. No, I'm going to... I imagine they're going to release an omnibus of this stuff this year or in 2016, and I'll pick it up then. I'll get that, but I have not gotten the premier hardcovers yet, nor have I been getting the single issues.
I've been getting the single issues. The extra material is, frankly, not worth the price they're charging. I've already got the original stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had read it back, not when it was first... I'm trying to think. I didn't read the early stuff when it was first coming out, but I got on board, I think, while the series was still going.
Mm-hmm.
Not positive about that. But, you know, I got on it decades ago. So rereading it now, it's like the oomph is gone because I know where it's going. I know how it gets there. And
yeah,
reading it before the Authority, some of the other early Wildstorm stuff, some of the edgier stuff out of the 2000 era, the Ultimates and stuff like that. Reading it before that is one experience. Reading it after that is something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, I think, that happened with the John Carter movie, where people watch it thinking, wow, that's derivative of X, Y, and Z, not realizing the story they were watching was written 100 years earlier.
Yeah.
Before movies, much less those particular movies.
Yeah, exactly.
So you come at it with a warped sense of what led to what. And for me, reading Watchmen after all of this other stuff, it's like, yeah, I've seen it. I've seen this taken to a further extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not bad. It's just not having the impact on me that I would have liked it, that it had originally. That's the way to put it. Let's refill to the list. Let's take out Image, Marvel, and DC. Take a look at some of what's left. One of the publishers that we just don't get to talk about too often is the one that's now at the top of my filtered list, and that's Archie Comics.
Ah, yes.
Afterlife with Archie, Volume 1, trade paperback, 13,798 units. Archie and Sam and I talked about this because they had some items on the top comics list also. Archie has become relevant.
Not necessarily.
Archie the character, but the publisher.
Yeah.
You know, him being married, him dying, he's going to get... crossover with Predators, Aliens, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
They're going in different directions. They're bringing back the Red Circle characters, but now it's the Black Circle, so presumably a darker take. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I'm a little hesitant on that one.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are too. Yeah.
I really liked what they were doing with the New Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
That had just such a great 80s, all ages superhero comic vibe to it, that to not continue with that really, really disappoints me.
Mm-hmm.
But they think they can make a run in the superhero genre with the Black Circle stuff. Maybe they can. You know, we may see.
Would they make the New Crusaders relaunch that as a darker tone?
I don't know.
That'd be a bad idea.
They're going with a different character for the Shield.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're just going to quietly ignore the New Crusader stuff or what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when I read the first issue, I'll have an idea. I don't know.
Yeah, when does that come out?
Soon.
Very soon, yeah.
Okay. Another month, if that. It might be sooner. I'm not sure.
And the Shield is the first title?
It's Black Hood, Shield, and the Fox, and I don't recall the order Fox. They come out in.
Okay. Yeah, I'll pick those up for sure. At least digitally, I will. Yeah.
I liked the Red Circle stuff that DC did not too long ago. Obviously, I like the New Crusaders. Big fan of that. I like the Impact run that DC did. I'd even run some of the JC line that happened back in the 80s?
Oh, that's old school. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's 80s.
So they've got some fun characters there. And if they can make a run with that, that's great. But actually taking Archie, Sabrina, and some of these other characters and getting them back out into the public eye and doing some cool stuff with it, they're shaking things up. I think 2015 could be a pivotal year for that publisher. Getting them from, yep, they're a large publisher, to they're actually now in the direct market, something I can talk about on a regular basis there.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Top item from Dark Horse, Avatar The Last Airbender, 7th trade paperback, 11,478 units. Top shelf had Nemo Roses of Berlin hardcover, 10,798 units. And jumping further down, IDW's top item was Lock and Key number 6 hardcover, 8,429 units.
Another great series, you know, being put out.
Yeah.
No, ended, but, you know, it was being put out. That was another fantastic series from IDW.
Very successful for them, yeah.
Yeah.
Boom. Top three items they've got on the list are Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
Around the 6,800, 6,700 range. So again, Boom has done very well with the kids' titles. Not surprising. But you know, it's something that I think that's a really important segment of the market that's been ignored for far too long.
Yeah.
Because if you can get kids at a young age interested in comics, interested in reading, that really is good for the long-term health of the industry because it gives us a new generation to bring in later.
Right. And, you know, following that, down at rank 168 and 179, you've got My Little Pony from IDW, which is right on that mark, too. So, oh, and there's one at 179. So, yeah, there's plenty of My Little Pony on here, actually.
Yeah, there was one a little further up at 146.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they're all over the board here. Yeah. That's really good to see.
I mean, there's a really strong showing for all ages and kids properties. And not reading some of these things, it's a little hard for me to determine which falls into which category. I mean, Avatar The Last Airbender, to me, is very clearly all ages.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
My Little Pony, honestly, I don't know. You know, is it something?
I don't know.
Is it something that people of our age would say, "Yeah, nah, I'm not going to read that," or "Hey, there's something for us to get out of it too"?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anybody that reads it. Honestly, do you? Do you know anybody that reads My Little Pony? Even getting it for their kids, like their daughter. I mean, I don't know anybody.
I had a coworker that was into the property, but I don't know that she ever read any of the comics.
Yeah,
and she's no longer with the company, and I think I'm not sure what the timing was on the title starting and her leaving the company to go on and do better things elsewhere or what have you. Switching gears a little, title that I've read recently and hadn't picked up before, ranked 222, Black Sad Amarillo hardcover. This is from Dark Horse. It's a $17.99 hardcover. It did 4,629 units. Honestly, I don't know a whole lot about the background of this property, but what attracted me to it was anthropomorphic animals in a very kind of a realistic yet almost 50s-ish kind of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And just it was a good story, good characters, fun read, and had a unique sensibility to the world. It wasn't something it's like, well, this is just another comic. No, it's like you look at it, it's like, boom, I'm in that world now.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to be said for having something that's got a unique identity on the market, out on the rack or what have you. Jumping down through the list, we've got everything from Sonic to Scott Pilgrim to Umbrella Academy to Star Wars on up and down. You know, we've just got a wide variety of things. Now, one at rank 510 is 47 Ronin hardcover, 2,849 units. This takes a classic story from Japanese culture. Mike Richardson wrote it, and Stan Sakai did the art. Great five-issue miniseries. No doubt it is a brilliant hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Only 2,800.
That came out in conjunction with a movie last year.
Yeah, there was a movie based on. There have been multiple movies done on the story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But, I mean, for it to do only 2,849, I really think that there's a bigger audience that wouldn't enjoy the story than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, go figure. So, jumping down, like I said, there's just all sorts of stuff, left, right, and center. Lowest thing on the list within the top 1,000 is Star Wars Legacy number 3 trade paperback. Again, 1,758 units. We had a few things below that, thanks to the small press and indie items. Walt Disney Donald Duck hardcover number 5 from Fantagraphics, 1,519 units. Unity from Valiant, its first trade, 1,506.
Yeah.
What else did Valiant have? They had something, I think, higher on the list. Let me filter to just Valiant real quick.
There's the Rye book.
Eternal Warrior was their top seller. It was their only item in the top 1,000 trades. Ranked 927. First volume did 1,868 units.
That was volume 1. Yep.
And then Rye placed lower on the list at rank 1244. I believe the first issue, not trade, but issue of Rye was on the comics list.
Oh, okay.
So if we, again, jump down to the bottom of the below the 1,000 mark, the lowest thing we had visibility into was Girl Genius trade paperback 13, 1,378 units, tying with the Sonic Universe trade paperback number 7 from Archie.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, by and large, good diversity of material this time around, good smattering of different publishers and stuff. I like how Image is really stepped up their game, and I think it gets it away from just being a two-publisher race, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
If we jump over to the other spreadsheet I've got in the workbook, this is the top trades by month. And what I do is I just break down the top 300 we get every month. Just look at how the units, the dollars are doing, both in general by publisher, and where the top and bottom of the top 300 go from month to month. If we look at the first two charts, which are the units and dollars for the 12 months, there's an upward trend in both of those in general. But really what it comes down to is there's an upward swing from January, slight up to February, big up to March. And then it starts folding back down, both on units and dollars, over April, May, and June. Spikes in July, back down in August, up a little in September, up a lot in October, down a little in November, and then down a fair amount in December.
Mm-hmm.
To where when the year ends, you're frankly not that much better. You're not that much appreciably better off either in dollars or units than where the year started, even though much of the year reflects better sales than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting.
Is that just a reflection of the cycle of comics, you think? Just, you know, summer does better, you know, late fall. I mean, is there a movie? It seems like there's a movie cycle to this thing, too, almost. You know, with the summer blockbusters and the fall blockbusters or something like that.
I think there is a cycle.
Who knows?
There is a cycle to it, but I think it's December, January, February. People are spending money on other things.
Yeah, I think
money
you're right.
And time. And then July, that seems to time out with some of the major conventions and such.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, September, October, school's back in session, you know, maybe some of that. It's hard to really pinpoint it to any one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But these sorts of spikes and trends, yeah, there is a seasonal nature to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I broke it down by publisher, DC, Marvel, and other. I really need to get to where I break that other into the other publishers, particularly Image and some of them. But normally it's just been a Marvel and DC race by and large.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And what we see is Marvel started and ended the year more or less in the same spot, but the trend seemed to be a little bit downward. They did really well in January, February, March, plummeted in April, not so great through really September, and then it jumped up in October, November, and then down again in December. DC, on the other hand, January went down to February, and then it just kind of arcs up almost continually through July. A little bit of a lull in August and September. October does well, and then it drifts a little further down.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to end the year a little bit better off than they were at the beginning of the year, but seem to have more of an upward direction over the year. The other publishers in aggregate, though, man, that's just a totally different ballgame. With the exception of February, they are always doing better than either Marvel or DC. And in February, they kind of, you know, intersect right there at about the same level as Marvel. But it went January down to February, up a huge amount to March, up even further to April, then down quite a ways on May, a little bit further in June. Definite spike in July, definite down in August, and then kind of arcing back up through September, October, November, and then down again in December, but ending a little bit better off than it started the year. And of course, the common thread there is all three channels, DC, Marvel, and other, ended the year just a little bit better than they started.
Mm-hmm.
With Marvel maybe ending a little bit worse. It's really, it's hard to tell in terms of units. You do the same thing by dollars, and first quarter, Marvel does better than DC, but really starting in April, the two lines are right on top of each other pretty much, with DC doing a little bit better in June than Marvel did.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the difference between the two is I think, reasonably negligible, whereas the other publishers start around the 6 million mark in January, February, get above the 8 million mark in March, drift back down it through April, May, and June, get back above it by a good-sized jump in July. So June is somewhere around, the 7 million. They're at about the 8.5, closing in on 9 in July, and then almost back down to 6 million in
December, yeah.
I was thinking August.
Or August, I mean, yeah, you're right.
Climbing back up in September, October, with October and November both above the, really almost at the 9 million mark, and then back down just above the 6 million.
Yep.
So definite peaks and valleys there. But I would say overall, all of them, again, had a little bit of an upward trend, but the controlling force for the dollars, the other publishers.
Mm-hmm.
Both they had more units, they had more dollars. But if you look at the trend of the overall dollars, it pretty much mirrors the trend of the other publishers' dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes to a strong list over at Image and just how many other publishers we've got on the list. You look at the bottom or the floor of the top 300, and it bounces around, but it goes from, you know, a little above 300 to right around 500 on up and down. The low point being in February and June, a little bit in August. The high points being in April, July, and October. So those are pretty much the same peaks we've seen elsewhere. Now you look at the ceiling, the top of the list where that top item is, totally different story.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's around the 10,000 mark, got a little below that, certainly in April, way below that, closing into down on 5,000, in August. But man, June, very close to the 30,000 mark. It was right around the 28,000 or whatever. And October, it was 25,000. And I'm pretty sure those coincide with major releases out of Image.
Yeah, it could be.
I would have
New Walking Dead trades or hardcovers or something like that, yeah.
And or Saga.
Yeah, or Saga, you're right. Well, yeah, in November, the Saga Volume 1, 3-in-1 edition came out. That was a big seller, I remember that. So, yeah, you're right.
If I were Kirkman, I would coordinate the releases of New Walking Dead trades and Saga trades such that they kind of are never in the same month.
Yeah.
That way you're guaranteed to almost always have something at or near the top of the list every time you can.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of this is just gaming the system, but it gives the perception that they're a stronger publisher, and they are strong, but this could magnify that perspective a bit.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, what we're seeing here is it was a good year, but it was not really a growth year in terms of the top 300 over the course of 2014. But there was no major loss of ground. There was no major bottom falling out of the market or whatever. But you compare, by and large, June to August or whatever, June, July to August and stuff. Yeah, there's some differences there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's most of the aggregate and the number crunching and stuff I've got. I thought overall it was a good year.
Yeah, I think it was a fantastic year. Yeah,
I think
it was fun.
We're poised for 2015 to be very eventful for Marvel and DC and the other publishers, and one that could really, you know, have repercussions for years to come with Secret Wars, with Convergence, both of those potentially changing those universes, the stuff coming out of Archie, Image continuing to do great stuff. It's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great time to read comics.
Yeah, and all those, Marvel, Secret Wars, and Convergence, even though those titles are all going to be coming out for the summer months, but they should be in trade paperback, John, by Christmas time, by November, December. It's usually when they try to get it out. So should be another, you know, heavy year for November and December next year.
I would definitely, if I were DC, aim to have the Convergence stuff in an Omnibus or two or Absolute or whatever.
Yeah.
In time for Christmas holiday shopping and such. Mm-hmm. And likewise, Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. Now, with Secret Wars, getting as many of those collections of the other events that are, building up to Battle World and such, would be a smart move also.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's about all I got to say on these things. What's going on with you these days?
Not too much. I'm just plugging along with my podcast. I'm coming up on my 9 or 10 years anniversary? I don't even know.
I think you were saying 10 when we talked last week.
I think it's 10. It's 10. It's just long. So, but no, I do want to let everybody know that I'll be taking a break from your show for a little while, but I'll still be coming back for roundtables and everything. But I think the monthly episodes, I'll be taking a step back. So I know that you've got some plans too, which is good. So, it's been fun doing this for so many years, John. It's been great. So, and I appreciate your friendship, and you're always going to be a good friend. So this has been a lot of fun. So I'm not gone. I'm just taking a break. So
I sorry to see you do that, but I totally understand that you've been, again, podcasting for a decade. I'm sure it feels like about a century, because I don't think people really get the amount of work it takes.
Well, you do. I mean, I've been doing it for 10 years, but you do like 4 or 5 shows a week. I don't know how you do it. I mean, that's insane. You know, I don't know what kind of drugs you take, man.
I take none, but I'm not getting much sleep either.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, we've been on Skype here, just to give the listeners a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff, for an hour and a half, almost exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this is going to edit down, you know, we spent about 10 minutes or whatever, just, hey, how you doing at the beginning? The pregame. I mean, it normally happens in Skype. Record the episode, we'll get off, we'll talk a little bit more. Then eventually, and this is after I've spent a couple of a day or two over a weekend or so back crunching all of the year-end numbers, which is oh so mm-hmm. much fun, but that gives us stuff to talk about, tangible numbers here. And then just scrolling through a spreadsheet that is just, you know, megabytes in size, thousands of lines long, and some other spreadsheets get to you know, dozens of columns across. Scrolling through that, listening to the other guy, trying to pay attention, that's tough. But then the editing and all of that, it's a lot of work to do these. And
it is a lot of work, you know, and considering sometimes, because we're in two different time zones, sometimes we don't get going until 9:30 or even 10 o'clock at night, and we're trying to squeeze in an hour and a half show. We both work. We both got to get up in the morning. And so we're, you know, I remember the last episode, we were both zombies. We were going to record it back to back, the December and this one. And we're like, no, can't do it.
Well, and you know, I've got celiac disease, which, you know, I have malnutrition essentially, but, you know, whatever. And there are days, some days better than others. Today wasn't too bad, but there are some days I am just struggling to find any word I can to get a point across.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, when Sam and I record, we tend to go a little bit longer on both the episode, and then we talk for a bit about how movies and TVs and stuff are doing.
Oh, yeah.
He's on the West Coast, so he's got a 2-hour advantage on me in terms of sleep.
Yeah.
But he's also gotten, I think, reasonably good at realizing that I've just gone incoherent and we should probably stop talking now. I have a great time talking with him. But you, we've been doing this since the August 2006 numbers.
Oh, my God.
So 8 years, 4 months. We started this.
So that's when I met you, because I met you in 2006.
Yeah.
We talked about it at
San Diego.
Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Let's do a show together. And we have not stopped. So.
Well, and we originally did this on your podcast. Those were the great days.
Did.
You were doing the editing. I would just you know, talk for a little bit. But I want the listeners to really understand what an impact you have had on the Comic Book Page podcast. Because without your help, your encouragement, your friendship over the last, you know, 8, 9, 10 years or whatever, there would not be a Comic Book Page podcast.
Oh, John.
You've been a huge help, a big inspiration. You've helped on the technical side. You've helped me, you know, work through, okay, where do I go and what do I do in this situation and that? Because there have been a couple of turning points here and there.
Oh, sure. It evolves, absolutely.
Well, if it doesn't over that long of a period of time, you're doing it wrong.
Well, no, but I mean, not only that, but we talked about it earlier in the show, how just the list has grown. I mean, we did it when it was 100 items, and now it's 300 items, and now it's 1,000, and you know, it's just the list has evolved. And with that, the show has had to evolve because we have more stuff to talk about. And not just Marvel and DC, but really all these other minor publishers like a Random House, like an Archie is finally on. And it's really fun to see them because can you imagine if we are doing this with 100 items a month, we'd be going bonkers. Because for the longest time, we said, why don't we expand it? Or why doesn't Diamond expand it? And they finally have. But they could expand it to 10,000 items. There's no reason why they couldn't. It's just too much data. And sometimes too much data isn't a good thing. So.
Well, it becomes data and not information.
Exactly.
And part of what I try to do, and you've been a great help in doing this on these episodes, is take all of this data, digest it, and get it back out there as meaningful information and insights.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some months there's more to talk about than others. Sometimes it's easier to articulate what we're trying to get across than others. Sure.
And sometimes we go way off topic and just ramble on.
But sometimes it's needed because comics are not sold in a vacuum.
Right. And that's why, you know, every summer, you know, we always talk about the movies. We've talked about the TV shows and how their impact. And you've always said, which is a great point, if everybody who went to go see Iron Man or Avengers or who watches Arrow on a weekly basis would go out and buy an Arrow comic book, you know, the sales would be off the hook.
Oh, geez. If one half of 1% did it, they'd double in sales. If everybody did it just once.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it would. It would fundamentally change the industry.
Yeah, it would.
And in hopefully a good way. Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading before we recorded tonight about the casting for the Netflix Jessica Jones series. Apparently they've cast characters and actors for the Teen Titans series, including Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon. It's like, wow, that'll be fun. Mm-hmm. We are the state the industry is at now versus when we started is just so radically different and in ways that we could not have predicted.
Oh, absolutely.
And I recall at one point saying, you know, I think trades are good. At some point they're going to, the there's going to be a turning point and trades are going to be the predominant revenue stream for comics. Mm-hmm. Hadn't happened yet. And at this point, I'm thinking it won't. Digital might. But hey, I've been wrong once, be wrong again. It's.
Well, yeah, they've been talking about digital for a long time too. And that hasn't really happened. I mean, you're a tech guy. I mean, for the first time since the iPad was brought out, you know, tablet sales are down that I just read. I mean, everybody owns one. There's no reason to upgrade to one, you know, kind of thing. So we'll see. They just got to get on the bandwagon and start reading their comics digitally. And hopefully that'll happen. We still have yet to see the impact of what Amazon and Comixology getting in bed together is going to be like and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's kind of a wait and see. We might have to wait for another year to see any impact from that because I don't think anything's really been done. But I mean, definitely the industry is changing and it's going to be an exciting time to see what happens at Marvel and DC with their, call it a reboot, call it whatever you want, but, you know, new universes really. So.
Yeah, no, totally. It's an exciting time. It's been a fun ride through all the episodes we've done. Mm-hmm. And again, I can't say enough of how much you have beneficially impacted my podcasting experience.
Oh, well, I thank you from the bottom of my heart too, man, because, you know, there's so many times, and you know this as a solo podcaster, you just want to quit, you know?
That's why I have co-hosts.
You know, downloads are down, you know, nobody is commenting, you know, the only thing I got now is like my friendships. And that's about it. I got you. I got Andy Tom. I got Mike Pfeiffer. I got a couple other guys. And that's really about it. So you guys keep me going. So I am not stopping my podcast. I'm slowing it down here and there. And one thing I'll definitely miss is having your podcast to fall in as a filler for my feed because I've always enjoyed doing that. And hopefully I've gotten you a couple of extra numbers along the way.
Hey, if you want to keep putting my episodes on your feed, I mean, just let me know. I'm good with that.
I might be doing that, actually. I could put the trade episodes in there as a filler. I could just present it as a, you know, hey, listen to this. I with your permission, I would totally do that to get you more downloads. That would be probably a good thing to do.
Happy to do it. I mean, your listeners are used to the content, and if they want more of it, I'm good with that.
Yeah, and we do plan on recording more in the future. I do want to do a couple roundtables with you.
Yeah.
And some other, just kind of like, just mix it up kind of thing, you know, so.
You've got an open invitation to be on the podcast whenever. Just let me know when you've got a topic or whatever that you think people would like to hear about. We'll schedule a time. We'll talk about stuff. We won't have the numbers get in the way, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's been great doing this with you. I've got a couple of ideas as to who might be able to fill the void because I need somebody on these episodes that knows the trades.
Absolutely, and there are a couple of guys out there. We know who they are.
Yeah, so I'm going to be talking to a couple, see if I can get somebody. And we'll see how that goes. And if any of the listeners say, "Hey, I am that guy," hey, drop me an email. Let me know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is one of those things, the numbers come out, I crunch them, I've been sending, in this case, you, Chris, the spreadsheet, but somebody else will be getting that. And, you know, then we hop on Skype, we talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for that to seem like an easy thing to do, but man, some of this stuff, you're getting halfway through a sentence and you're realizing, crap, I see conflicting information right there, let me re-vector or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of data in really knowing what's going on in the industry. I can do that definitely on the comic side. I can do a lot of that on the trade side. By nature of the fact, I'm reading a couple of dozen new comics a week and they eventually all get collected in trade. Mm-hmm. But knowing somebody who's up like you've been over the last decade of this was in trade versus in print or hardcover first, et cetera. It's just, again, your knowledge has been a huge help.
So. Well, and definitely, I mean, any of the listeners out there can use, you know, you, I know you've got a ton of resources on your website. Mm-hmm. Come along to my website and look at the collected edition release schedule that I have aggregated that, you know, I, you know, aggregate loosely from a number of different sites, including, you know, Charlie's Comics List or the publisher's websites or even Diamond itself, and kind of, you know, pare it all down into what's coming out during what week into the future. And I've got all the past lists up there as well, going all the way back to 2006. So there's a lot of information on my site too.
Yeah,
so,
that's
not
just
to mention
a,
all the podcasts. So that's a fun little resource to have. Yeah,
yeah.
So I know you link to it as well.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
No, man. That'll pretty much do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.